So we'll go ahead and start the meeting at 1:32. We'll call this meeting to order. We'll go right into the third topic that's on your agenda, which is the Governor Prince Boulevard sewer replacement. I know John Cartier is
on his way in
right there. And the reason why we called this went on by, but anyway, was the newspaper article. We had a presentation approximately 3 months ago, how we were under budget on time and everything, and then all of a sudden there's a newspaper article. So I think we want to know exactly where we stand on this, on the Governor Prince Boulevard and so forth, and where we're heading with it. So those are two questions that, you know, I personally have, and when is the due date of being done, if we changing contractors or we keeping contractors. So a little bit of housekeeping before we start. Councilman Hollins is, well, first of all, I'll go around because we didn't do that. And Cartier. So we have in attendance here, Councilman Smalley, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Street, Councilwoman Diller, Councilman Retta, Councilman Hollins, and of course Councilman Cartier, and myself, Tim Sheldon, my aide, Stephanie Rizzo is taking the minutes. And motion for
motion to approve the minutes, June 5th.
Second.
Motion made, second. On a question, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Approving.
Aye.
Okay. So who's up for the Governor Prince sewer replacement project, and where are we at, and the three questions that I was talking about?
Sure. Tracy Searle, Special Services Department. Passing out a map for you that just shows the project area. I always find that helpful. It shows up on orange on the map. And the Governor Prince project is a portion of the overall Brandywine Country project that we presented on about a month ago. Overall, that project is under budget and on time, but this particular aspect of it, we've had some problems with. If you look on your map, the project area is about 1.5 miles, and what we're doing is replacing the pipe along that 1.5 mile stretch of Governor Prince. We're putting in between 6 and 7 foot pipe in this area, and as you can imagine, there are a lot of utilities already within this project area. In close proximity to our pipe, we have a 24-inch natural gas line, also a nitrogen line, and an oxygen line. So the main reason for the delay in this project has been that the county halted construction some time ago because we felt that the construction methods endangered the stability of those lines. Our consultants have evaluated the area and said that looking at the natural gas, the nitrogen, the oxygen together, if anything were to happen to those lines, it would be catastrophic as far as take out 495 and, you know, six blocks into Ellesmere. So,
Tracy, can I interrupt you myself, speaking from the chair? When we bid the projects out, isn't that all put on a typographical area to say these are like Miss Utility, I mean, but even the more specific area, the engineer is saying this is where this is where that is, that's why we're putting our sewer line right here.
Yes.
Was there a problem? I guess my question is, was there a problem with the engineering aspect of this?
This was not a case where we were not aware of these utilities. We were aware of these utilities going into the project. The way our specs are written, the contractor is required to have construction methods that do not damage the utilities. There's also parts of the spec that talks about the degree of movement of the soils, which they're restricted to. The means and methods on the way they do the construction in the trench is something the contractor supplies once they get the contract, you know, for our approval. So they believed that their initial construction method, which was just a trench box, pushing a trench box through, was going to be protective enough. We actually had soil movement markers on the project site, and their construction method was causing more movement of the soil than we believe was safe for these utilities. So that's really what the issue was. But they were aware, we were all aware of the utilities now at the project initiation.
I guess that goes into another question, and I don't want to behold a meeting. Since they're, are they liable then? Because when you get the specs out, you bid the job, contractor A bids against contractor B, C, D, one down the line, and these are all in the specs that you're supposed to provide this. This is your engineering. As you said, you put the box down and you roll, you know, so the dirt doesn't, there's no movement. Isn't the contractor responsible for this?
We believe they are. However, they're fighting back. They believe that, I think the fight we're in a little bit, they believe that their initial methods were protective enough, and then you get into a little bit of a dispute, you know, regarding the specs. But we believe they are responsible. We've been holding them to that. In fact, this week, they actually began their test of a new method, which will include putting in sheeting to secure the soil while the trench box is going through. They started that this week, and the test will take about 3 weeks. We're monitoring that. And if that works, then they will proceed using that method. So it's just been, you know, a bit of a back and forth for a while, because obviously the more, we believe the safer construction methods are more costly. So that's been the...
But we're not getting hit up for any change orders, or are we?
We may. I think that a lot of that depends on... I think first we were trying to all find the correct method. They can't submit a trench order when we haven't accepted their construction. They can't submit the change order because we haven't accepted any construction method. Does that make sense? Whether they will, if we accept one, I don't know. I'm just being honest with you. You know, I can't predict that. And we're assessing liquidated damages, so I think that a lot of these issues will still play out.
Mm-hmm. The only thing is, and I'll open the floor and I'll just run the meeting, because if I'm contractor B, and I was going to put sheathing in, that was my goal the whole time, I'd be very upset at the county, or to lose the bid, because I wanted to do it this way, and this was the method that I was going to use, and contractor A, who beat me out, got halfway done. Or I don't know how far it got done, I shouldn't say. That's a question to be asked. But now, and by the way, I'm coming up with a change order that puts me above what contractor B may or may not have been.
No, if we're not, they can submit one. That does not mean that we would approve one. To date, just to be clear, we have been very clear to the contractor that our specs are clear, that they need to meet this clear safety standard, and that we consider that part of their original bid. So I do want to be clear, that's been the county's position. I'm not saying that we would approve it. You know, there's been a lot of back and forth already, and so whether they would attempt to submit something. So, and if you look on the map, it does show construction, what point the construction is currently at this time. The one thing we did do recently in response to some of the residents' concerns was to meet with DelDOT to see if there was any way we could alleviate any of the traffic inconveniences we've heard about. If you look at the north end of the project, the three intersections that are marked up there, there were two in particular that we were hearing concerns about: Rolling Road and Winding Lane. The issue being people in those neighborhoods could not come out and go northbound on Governor Prince. But in meeting with DelDOT, those areas are right where traffic is going from two lanes to one lane as you approach the construction site. And we tried all different scenarios with DelDOT, and they really felt nothing would meet their safety standards, that there was too much movement of traffic to allow that to come out. And it's very important for the county to meet their standards. If we did not, and anything were to happen, any types of accidents, the county would be liable. So unfortunately, we could not change those patterns. We did have asked the contractor to, when it failed to, we had the DelDOT actually went out and cleaned the streets, and the county sent out somebody to mow the grass in the area just to try to make the construction site The appearance of it improved a little bit to residents. The other thing, if you notice, these neighborhoods impacted do have access out to Philadelphia Pike. That's not their only point of ingress and egress from their neighborhoods. And if you look at the map, I think that does show that they have a lot of alternative routes as well. So where we stand at this time is going through the test with the contractor over the next 3 weeks. And then depending on the results of that, we'll have a better idea of our path forward. If it works, which we're hopeful that it does, they will continue on using that construction method, and hopefully we can push them and get it done as soon as possible. If not, we're going to, I think, have to revisit it and likely look at it with the law department a little bit.
Okay, open it up to the floor. Councilman Cartier.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Special Services for, you know, putting this on to discuss today. I want to open my remarks by saying that I live in the very close proximity to this project. I'm impacted by it, like area residents are. I went to an extensive meeting with a project overview meeting near the site with DLDOT designers, members of the department. Tracy was there. And, you know, I went into the meeting having a sense that, you know, with the lengthy delay of this, that we should maybe redo the traffic pattern. And, you know, I had a lot of questions about why we're under this delay. What I can say is when I got out of the meeting after, you know, probably an hour, hour and a half looking at all the issues, you know, I really feel like the department is being prudent in the way that they asked this project to be halted while they study the soil issue of, you know, the soil subsiding under existing pipelines. And Tracy mentioned pipelines. Let me just, and correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is the three pipelines, two of them are owned by Lind, which is a company that deals in a lot of gases for industrial processes. The two Lind pipelines, one is oxygen. We all know that's highly flammable. The other one is nitrogen. They're old pipelines, very old, and to what appears to be very good condition. They operate under a pressure of about 150 psi. The natural gas line is 24 inches in diameter. That's the outboard of the three, toward the 495. That also operates under pressure exceeding the other two. So, you know, you're looking at an extremely flammable situation here. You know, I think the department is saying we don't want to have a situation down the road where this, you know, sewer line goes in and the soil subsides, and the risk of failure of one or all of these pipelines occurring at some point, especially with the Lynn pipeline situation, causing, you know, a tragic situation. So, and then looking concurrently at the traffic divert and the safety issues and the legal implications of having a designed traffic divert system approved by DLDOT, literally like three or four blueprints you're going through. It has to do with issues of safety, liability, and all that. I came away pretty much understanding that I think the department was being prudent and that we shouldn't divert traffic in any way. We shouldn't relieve it. Okay? I think the only area where we got a little issue, okay, is that we need to be more proactive informing the public in the area about these issues. Now, I know that there are disputes going on with the contractor, but just to give the public a sense that, you know, we know that you're inconvenienced. We know that, you know, this is, you know, an unsightly project's gone on, you know, a little longer than it should have. But here's why. And I think that's enough to kind of, you know, put the proper perspective in the public's mind on this issue. As I said, you know, I'm impacted just like folks are in the area. And what she said is absolutely true. People in these neighborhoods affected are not locked into the Governor Prince. That's not their only means of north-south access. They can go on the Philadelphia Pike just, you know, pretty much as easily to get where they need to go. So, I just think we need to do a better job in terms of the PR aspect of this, and not just to, you know, gloss over anything, but to kind of let the public know the safety issues that pertain, and that, you know, we're looking out for the long-term issue and safety of their neighborhoods, and this is why such actions are being undertaken, and this is why the project is under a delay. So that's my only takeaway from all the fact-finding and meetings that I have as to, you know, whether, you know, the contractor and change orders and, you know, different methods. You know, I haven't seen the contract. I don't know what's in it. I do know that, you know, you're dealing with a lot of old buried pipeline infrastructure here that is, at least the Lynn pipeline certainly has problematic aspects to it. So I think I would like to continue to engage the department and maybe the administration about what we can do to do a kind of letter to constituents, or I don't know if we want to do a public meeting. I'm open to whatever what people think in the department think we should do, because I do think that's an area where we need to kind of step it up a little bit.
Tracy Searle, Special Services. We are planning to do a public meeting in 30 to 60 days. We were hoping to get the testing of the new construction method done, because I think that then we can give residents a better concept of the timing from that point forward. But I copied you on at least one response. We've had some inquiries from residents, and we have said that we would convene a public meeting in the next 30 to 60 days. And we will try to do a better job of communicating. A lot of these projects have been Surrey Park, Tarleton, within one very confined neighborhood, mm-hmm. and we've done those public meetings. Right. This was such a large area that it was handled more through the smaller ones, and given all the complications, we'll certainly arrange for one.
Well, I appreciate that. I think there are opportunities coming very soon for at least some representation department to be in Claymont. We have the Claymont Community Coalition meeting, which is toward the end of the month. We also have the Claymont DRAC meeting. Now, I don't guarantee that a lot of folks are going to show up at those things, but at least we have two pretty well-recognized public meetings. Well, one is a public meeting. The other one is really well-recognized by members of the community, you know, that being the coalition meeting. So the department can possibly show up to offer some explanations if, you know, people show up there at all to, you know, at least have some interaction on that basis. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, you're the, you know, it's your area, so you, I would suggest that. But, and I would like to announce that Councilman Bell is here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Councilman Smiley.
I'll just suggest, as one who travels up and down that road, as others do, one of the things we may look at, too, is further utilization of the county channel, the TV station. I know we can't put everything in there, but we could use the county channel not only to announce the meeting, but to give a brief update. You know, here's the area of construction. Delays are taking place due to safety concerns and revisit of the construction process. Just some bullet points like that. Let's use that. We have that. And needless to say, I'm looking at cost. We already have that. Fiscally, it's responsible. And I just think that maybe, you know, that's an avenue that we have. We should be using it.
Well, the DRAC meeting is at the front hall.
Okay, Councilman Retta.
A couple things. Tracy, as far as what Timmy brought up about the extras, so to speak, I mean, if it was a bid under our specifications and we have to hold them to it, I think we should stick to our guns on that. The other is what Councilman Cartier brought up about the pipes from the Lynn Gas being so bad. Is anybody from the state or anybody getting involved to make these people fix that? Because, you know, you're down there fooling around, putting pipe in and moving dirt and this and that. You might not hit that pipe, but later on it can settle a certain way and you can have a problem.
That's actually the standard that we set up in the specs for movement takes into account future settlement. That's one of the reasons we're so conservative, because over time, as the soil keeps settling, and you probably know this, if you get a breach under the pipe like this, that's what can cause it to become weak and go in, and that could happen 2 years down the road.
Right.
That is something that was designed in to the standards we have. It's an unusual situation with these, they're private utilities in a public easement that when we first hit them, you know, we're aware that they were there. We never hit them. But we did check with, you know, different state agencies, but they were grandfathered in and acceptable there because they're private. You know, the Delmarva line, because it's public, gets checked as far as its integrity on an annual basis. Because these are private lines, they don't have the same standards. And we looked for something there because just the concept that it made us uncomfortable with these lines there. But basically, they were put in the 40s or 50s and basically just grandfathered and not subject to really very many standards. So it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, so there's no avenue that these people can fold it, you know, or some like a letter or something sent to them saying that you got bad lines there?
Oh, they... Conversely, I mean, they know it, or they know that they don't know the condition, I should say, and because of that, they've actually sent a lot of correspondence to us. They were initially concerned with the blasting that took place. We've actually found that this construction method caused more movement than the blasting was, but they keep sending letters to the county trying to say, you will be liable if anything happens to our lines, trying to say they're concerned with the condition. We've come back and said, you know, we're doing everything we can to be protective. So it's been a hard, it's been a tough situation.
Tracy, one question while we have the map. How much is completed out of this entire thing?
The circle, the construction to this point, roughly within that purple circle.
That's it?
That's it, yeah. They just got that far on the project.
They've just got that far on the project.
Yeah, they've gotten, if you go north, up to where that circle is. So they still have
a long way.
A good bit to go. Yes, this is the second piece of, we did complete the North Delaware.
Right.
You know, and that came up to this. That was actually a separate project. Right. That is completed, but on this project, that's all the farther.
Gotcha. How long is their how far up would you say this phase goes? Just to that? Or?
It goes, it's marked on here, up to about the Perkins Run. If you see the orange is the project.
Oh, okay,
area.
That's the whole
the
thing.
Perkins
okay,
Run
gotcha.
Is roughly the northernmost.
Mm-hmm. I see that now, sorry. That, Councilman Cartier.
And you're contemplating a third phase to this, correct? Or is this
going to... Yeah. And what we're going to do at the termination of this project, we're going to do some monitoring overall to see where we are. And this had been the critical, the last piece. We might have even mentioned it when we presented to council a month or two ago about Brandy 100. This is the last large piece of some work we were doing, after which we want to step back and monitor and then make some decisions on the future program. I think that phase two and some of the outer phases can probably be reduced, you know, but we really need this piece completed to do the monitoring and to determine what we absolutely need to do in the area. So,
and just for, you know, information for members of council, what we are doing here is putting in a whole new entire line, and we're going to take the existing large main out of service once we complete this, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a, as you said, you know, 6-7 foot pipe.
It's huge, yeah. It's a big project.
And we're, what, 20 to 30 feet under the ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Any questions? Any more questions? From the public?
I may have missed it, but was there any possibility of some sort of timeline at the for possibility of the project being completed, or?
I think we didn't get that far because we just started back into doing the construction itself with the new method.
And no projection on the timeline.
Well, I think we should ask that.
They can answer. Okay, if Tracy wants to answer, but. I think you said something about it.
Did you ask about a projection on the time frame to complete?
Yes.
Really, that's why we're waiting to get the test on this construction method completed. If it doesn't work, you know, we don't really know what the time would be. If it does work, we're still probably 6 months
to a year from being complete.
Worst case scenario then would be at least a year?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, seeing none, thank you very much. The fourth one is the prevailing wage. We have a program, but it's the prevailing wage. We invited Bill McCluskey to give, I guess he's here, I'm sure, for this. So to give us an update on any offenders, any fines, any people that this board, what his take is on the prevailing wage, how it's going, and so forth, and just give us briefly, it's been 6-7 years since we've had an update. And then we really finally got into some projects where everything was on the prevailing wage. Yeah. So this time, to let know Councilman Powers is here, and turn it over to Bill McCluskey.
Good afternoon. As Tim stated, I'm in my 7th year serving as the prevailing wage compliance officer for the county. A lot of changes have taken place, most of them for the better, since we've started this program. Give you one example, one of the first contractors I dealt with at the Woodlawn Library, when I saw them shortly after that over at the Public Safety Building, one of the craft people came up to me and said that they're glad that we're out here, because since their company found out, they quit fooling around with their money. They're getting paid their proper wages and so forth. Over the past 6.5 years, we've had quite a few violations. People have been fined, given strikes toward the barment. We've had, I think, 2 or 3 that have been debarred for failure to comply to our program. On the other side, it's positive. Contractors now are calling us because they can't get into the system to put their payroll in because we were not aware they were on the project. Subcontractors on the heavy construction, I may show up this week and have the same 4. Next week I show up, there may be another 1 or 2 added that we did not know was going to be on the site. So therefore they couldn't get into the program because we did not enter them for that particular project. So things are better in that aspect. I used to have to go out, find out that you were out there, and then call your company, send them a packet of information notifying them, like we do with everyone, that you are responsible and you have to live up to the ordinance as far as submitting electronic payroll submittals. So in my personal opinion, I think things are going along very well. There were some questions earlier this year put to me as to why we had no violations last year. Mainly that's because of what I just stated. People realize that we're serious about it, that we are out there weekly. We hit almost every job weekly. Talk to the craft people. And the craft people themselves are getting a lot more comfortable in talking with us if they have any issues. In the beginning, it was like pulling teeth out of a whale to get any of them to talk about any of the issues out there. Tracy's handing out a couple of handouts. I believe one of them, you council members usually get either monthly or quarterly at the minority participation report. And another piece she's handing out, I believe, is the electronic payroll verification form. Last year, during an audit, we were asked how do we verify that we've actually reviewed the payroll submittals. There was nothing in place at the time. Since then, we've developed a spreadsheet, and we go in, we look at all the payrolls. On the verification sheet, you'll see the contractor enters the pay period they're entering, the date they enter it, and then there's the last one to the right is when we reviewed that payroll. And then you'll see my name on all of them at this particular time because I'm the only one who's been reviewing them. Jack Rojas, who also does prevailing wage, as most of you in here know, is our contracts officer, so he's been busier than one on paper hanger doing contracts, so he hasn't had an opportunity lately to do the prevailing wage issues. If anybody has any questions regarding our prevailing wage or where we might be, I'll be glad to answer them.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wondering, when you say that 2 or 3 were barred,
yes.
What does that mean? Okay, as far as
That means...
Are they barred from all future work in the county?
They are barred. Once we debar them, they are debarred for 3 years from bidding or working on any county work. With that said, they could be in the middle of a project right now. They get to finish that project. They're not going to throw them off because that's more costly to the county. But in the future, they cannot bid those jobs.
If they bid after the three-year period, is there a review process to make sure that they're complying prior to awarding any new contracts, or do we award and then debar them again after the fact?
After the 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, after the 3 years, they are given the opportunity to bid, you know, our work.
Okay.
And so far, we haven't had anybody do that. I believe the three or the two that have been debarred have been subcontractors, not primes. And they've been very small contractors.
Bill, I guess another question, it comes up, and I don't know if this is your department at all, so just say, look, it's not my department, but under minority participation report, and does your office go over it and say, well, look, this particular, I'm just going to take a job being done on a governor, I'm just going to say Governor Prince Boulevard, since we're already in an interceptor. And it's 18 employees, two minorities. Do you, first, how do you address it? And is that looked upon, I know you're not into contracts, but does contracts see that maybe this person isn't willing to go by the Responsible Contracting Act, which is in place, and which this is mandatory or, you know, looked upon in the bidding process?
To be honest with you, I could not answer that question. I don't know, Tracy, not to drag you into this issue, but...
In other words, are they looked... the question is, okay, say this particular company is not doing what the Responsible Contracting is asked them to do. And they don't adhere to it, or do you say they don't have anybody at this time to do the specialty work or something? I'm just going to say specialty. Are they asked and questioned why the participation level is that higher than what it particularly is, or are they looking when they're getting another job? Say the third phase, I'm just going to say phase three, goes out the bid. Is that looked upon in contracts to say, well, wait a minute, you didn't really adhere to the Responsible Contracting Act?
That would be part of a subsequent contract where we could look at it and see, are they responsible? You know, do we have good evidence that shows they weren't, that shows they didn't comply with the Responsible Contractor? One of the things we're looking at is even possible code revisions that give the county a little bit greater teeth as far as determining whether a contractor is responsible and denying a bid. I think sometimes the language with respect to minorities, just that component of it, it's a little bit subjective in that it requires them to use best efforts, but it's not a standard that says you shall meet, you know, 20%. So it's a little bit difficult to look at a situation like this, particularly if a good reason's articulate, well, they articulate a reason that, you know, I think that sometimes that's tough as far as deciding whether to award another contract to them, just because the language itself is a little bit subjective. Does that make sense? We are seeing overall, when we track it, I think we're seeing overall between 17% and 20% minorities. So we have been pleased overall. I think, you know, with the numbers, we think they've generally been better than they even were a couple years ago. So we do look at this regularly as we get these reports. One of the things is we look at provisions to our code. We're looking at possible things to help with some of these contracting issues. It seems like we've had a lot lately for some reason. And this is an area where we're, you know, open for suggestions or ways we could, you know, do it a little bit better.
And last question from the chair. The apprenticeship programs and so forth. I know, Jack, we send them over to the Department of Labor. and they stamp it. And I do know that actually one of the inspectors was over there that once they were awarded a Kirkwood Library job, they stopped their apprentice program halfway through the job because you couldn't, as Bill, Mr. McCluskey just said, you're not throwing that person off the job after he started. I was just wondering if there's, if you think, I don't want to direct you, but and Bill can chime in if he wants to. Do you think there's anything that we could do to strengthen that? Though I know it's a state law as far as them handling apprenticeships, but it seems to me that a lot of these contractors, basically I'm just going to come out and say it's bogus on a lot of this stuff.
It's, you know, what we hear now, when this first came out, we all heard, you know, some pushback from different groups. I think what we're seeing now is for work that is more our regular line of work, we have a lot of sewer contracts, it's a steady stream. We don't have issues. The people who bid those jobs know it, the apprenticeship programs are out there, and we're not seeing a lot. I think where we're seeing it more is maybe the building projects, and I only say that because the people are coming to us saying, well, there isn't an apprenticeship, there isn't a training program here in Delaware. So I don't know how true all those assertions are. I'm just kind of conveying what we hear.
Right.
So I don't know whether it's trying to work towards getting more of these programs. I think they require at least 15 students, the state does, to have a program, but again, I've heard the assertions. I haven't necessarily investigated the validity of them. I'm just kind of giving you the feedback that I've heard recently. I do think, I mean, when you look at how far it's come on the sewer projects, a lot of you were involved. We don't have an issue. A lot of these contractors, even at first, that balked a little bit, did it, and I think it's been working well. So,
because I know apprenticeships, there's a mandatory minority participation. You know, that's a federal law, so you get opportunity. So that helps it out, too. Okay, I'm going to go to Councilman Street, and then Councilman Tackett. Go.
I was kind of going to skip this meeting and try not to get into controversy, but at the point where I hear, in response to your question, the word pleased in response to the minority participation. And I hear essentially bragging about progress. Well, I don't know who's pleased about what, but, and I don't know what the sum total of these contracts is, but in a 6-month period, 34 black people working, representing 5% of the workforce for these contracts. So for those who are pleased, God bless you. I am not pleased. It's just woefully insufficient. And when you frame it and you say that there is 17% and the report is 28% minority, that sounds good, but the fact of the matter is, to have in 2012 5% of the workforce for these multi-million-dollar contracts to be black people, we ought to be appalled. I'm appalled. And, you know, I sit here and turn over a sewer truck, and that's $400,000. We got all kind of money to spend. Special services, get whatever special service wants, when it wants, how it wants, regardless of how much. But there's going to come a point in time, sometime, where it's going to be necessary to get 7. And so I don't want anybody screaming, hollering foul because the project gets held up. I'm letting folks know now, unless I see some specific action from the administration and from the department to change these numbers, then when the opportunity presents itself, and I can hold something up, that's just what I'm going to do.
All right, Councilman Tackett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry, I'm late. Maybe you've already explained this a little bit, just to clarify.
I do want to announce that you're here, too.
Oh, thank you. Probably why I'm speaking.
You're not here.
Do I read this correctly to draw the conclusion to say, like, you know, obviously my concern is Castle Construction in Glasgow Park. And when I see your name over here at the end, that means they are meeting the ordinance for the responsible contractors.
All right. That job, as you well know, is finished as far as I know. And also backed on repairs. I believe the report you're looking at is the payroll verification.
Well, it says...
Or is that the minority?
It said reviewed by...
Okay.
It's payroll.
Electronic payroll submitted. Okay.
Yeah. That report you're looking at was brought about because of an audit last year. During the audit, I was asked, what do I do, and so forth. And when I explained to them, the question was put to me, how do I verify or confirm that I actually looked at the payroll submittals? So, beginning of this year, we contacted the IT, asked them if they could incorporate something into our system where we could just go in, hit a box, and the date and time would come up. They said they couldn't do that. Not with the program that we have. So for about 2 months, I had to download every payroll submittal, write my name and date on there when I looked at it. And I have a file this big just for 2 months. So then finally we came up with establishing the spreadsheet here. And what that spreadsheet there tells you is the pay period the contractor is reporting for, the date they went in and made their payroll submittal, and the third column is when I reviewed it, and then my name. That's where we are with that.
Okay.
Hopefully, somewhere along the line, we get the IT folks where myself or Jack Woolhouse can go in, review them, and just hit a box. Personally, I think it can be done because when the contractor goes in to submit their electronic payroll submittal, our system tells us the date and the time within the second that they went in there to make that entry. And it tells you the date, the time, within a second, when they finished the entry and moved on to the next one. So if they can put that in there for the contractor, there ought to be some way of incorporating that for our benefit. And we won't have this paper shuffle, and it won't take as long for us to verify that we actually did our job.
Okay. I was just piggybacking off the chairman's.
One more thing about that minority report. We put that together on the electronic payroll submittals. I have a master sheet. I can tell you everybody's name was on our jobs from January 1st up to last week. Also, what I do with that master sheet is I put behind their name whether they're white, black, Hispanic, American Indian, and so forth. So when the end of the month comes, I know where I left off last month. I just look, add the numbers, change the numbers there. We do that in-house also, based on that electronic payroll submittal.
All right, since we're on that topic, I'm Councilman Street, you'd probably do a point of order, so go ahead.
No, since he can do that, then I'd be really interested in seeing if you got the names, you know who what, then I'd like to see the breakdown of the actual money. Okay, since he can do that, then you should be able to say, in terms of the payroll, how much white employees made, how much Hispanic employees made, how much black employees made. You can do that. I'd like to see how this plays out in terms of the dollar.
Could that be done well? Because that's a labor, you know, there'd be classification.
Anything's possible. I will add this. In 2 days from now, I'm getting a total knee replacement. I will be out of the office until... I'm hoping to be back by Labor Day. We're scrambling now to find people to cover what I do as far as reports and getting out on the job. To do what Councilman Street's asking for, I'm sure it could be done, but it would be very labor intensive.
The only reason why I ask that is, you know, I'm just going to say Jay Street's a plumber pipe fitter. Mm-hmm. He makes whatever it is per hour. If he worked 40 hours 1 week, we know what he makes. Penrose Hollins is an electrician or something. He's a different category. You would know how much he makes. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's not going to be labor positive.
Well, I know you well, I'm not to interrupt you. if it was as easy as taking one guy or one individual, one lady, whatever, times that rate, 40 hours, it'd make it a lot simpler. They don't make 40 hours a lot of them most weeks. So I had to look at every report, total the hours up for J Street, times whatever his rate is, and do that every time I came across his name. Can it be done? Yes.
Mr. Mayor?
Acting General Manager, Special Services. We'll get that accomplished. I'm not sure how much labor intensity we'll get it taken care of for the council. This is an issue, Greg, we have had discussions about internally. And we certainly are willing to work with council in any way we can to improve those numbers. We look at them when we get them. And we've had many conversations as to how one will go down.
Yeah, I jumped over Councilman Retta, and then I'll go to Councilman.
I'll wait my turn.
Yes, you are.
Sure.
And then Councilman Hollins.
My turn?
Yes.
Thank you. Bill, on your sheet here for the minority report, on the back page, you have a total of the amount of people that are working.
Correct.
Okay.
And we were looking at, what, 604 right now?
You got 604 for the total. Part of my question is, on this, is that you have a same contractor multiple times on here. We'll take Eastern States because they're on top.
Correct.
Okay. I know they're on different jobs.
Correct.
Okay. You know yourself where I'm going with this. Some of the jobs that we've been on different, you know, in our other life, they would take you from this job, put you on that job, and classify you as being on job A, and then when you get on job B, you're classified as on job B, but it's the same person.
Correct.
So the total amount of people that are here, is that really a total amount, or are we looking at something different here?
That's the total amount overall. Where you're going, the first year when I crunched the numbers, and I had the same thought under my mind. So I went back and I eliminated. Let's say you were on five jobs, I eliminated you four times. And when I did those eliminations and then crunched the numbers, the percentages came out within 1 or 2% of what I had originally. They did not change or fluctuate that much. So I quit wasting my time eliminating guys that are out on five or six different jobs. I just take the numbers as they come now, total them up, and divide the
So we're within a 5%, we'll say?
I would say yes.
Plus or minus?
Mm-hmm. Easy.
Councilman Hollins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These numbers are really the identical numbers that we receive from the spin report from procurement officer. There's nothing any different about them. They're just as disappointing. I think that these reports, I mean, they're done very well, but I think what they also demonstrate is that whatever we're not doing or what are we doing just plainly isn't working. And as General Manager Merritt said, I mean, we had numerous conversations for numerous years about this. I mean, over and over and over, we keep talking about this stuff, and I'm just kind of sick and tired of looking at this stuff and talking about it. When the General Manager for Procurement was here, she was saying that, well, we are going to get together with Special Services, and we're going to work on the bid process, and that'll help us get more diversity on these projects with these millions and millions of dollars, with the numbers that are reflected. It's just completely outrageous. I'm exactly where Councilman Street is. I'm going to find myself just not voting for a lot of these projects just as a demonstration of an unwillingness for this government to go forward with something in a positive way to try to achieve some semblance of diversity. It just is not here, and we kept hearing the same thing every 6 months, whether it's coming from Special Services or whether it's coming from procurement. These numbers are not moving. If anything, they're getting worse in a lot of cases. And nobody's doing anything at all about it. And everybody out there who's getting these contracts know that. They know that we're not serious, and if we were
they would do something quite different. They would do the same thing that Pettinaro did when he came before us to try to get the bond money for the courthouse project. He did something about that because he felt that this council was serious. At this point, there's nothing to indicate that this government is serious about diversity, and these projects are going to continue to go to a privileged class of people who don't give a damn about diversity, and I'm sick and tired of it.
Go ahead, another Councilman Cartier.
You know, when you look at this, the report on minority participation, and you look at the amount of work that is here, it's millions of dollars of work. And I just want to, and I was active along with Councilman Sheldon developing the responsible contractor ordinance, and we took the diversity challenge very seriously in that ordinance within the legal constraints that we felt we could operate under. And I'm also extremely disappointed with the minority participation, especially the African-American community, as shown by these numbers. One of the things that I would throw out on the table, when we were doing the research on the responsible contractor ordinance, there once was, I think it still exists under county code, a Office of Equal Opportunity. And the charge of that office is to go out throughout county government, working with it, whoever we're working with, to go encourage through meetings, as a bully pulpit, the, at that time it was called Equal Opportunity, today we call it Diversity, to make the government able to reflect the people we serve. And I think that's, when you talk about doing something, I think that that's a worthy thing to revisit, and to let the contractor community know we are truly serious about that requirement for diversity. And I would be perfectly willing to undertake looking at that. We are going to have a tremendous amount of capital spending in the future, and we just got to, you know, step it up and get serious about diversity. You know, part of the idea is these, you know, prevailing wage with diversity, you give people a step up in life. I'm very, very supportive of that idea, and it's really discouraging to see, you know, one ethnic community disproportionately represented over another. I'm kind of trying to figure out why this is going on. I don't have an answer. But I think the Office of Equal Opportunity, maybe something we could pursue in terms of this government.
Anybody else? The reason why I wanted this on is because we can get this out in the open if we come up with amendments to the ordinance. Now's the time to start putting our heads together. All right, then. No other, any questions on the public? Seeing none, Bill, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This time, anything under other? Public comment. If not, a motion
to adjourn.
Second.
To adjourn. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.